what I wanted to share tonight is, in a sense, having to do with, you know, coming out of the election. And, but this isn't obviously about politics. This is about practice. And it's about how to, some thoughts about, or whatever, about utilizing mindfulness in difficult times, and particularly, and I'll go into this in terms of Vedanas and mind states. And for those of you who don't know what that is, I'll explain. But, you know, one of the, I mean, really a core miracle thing about his teachings is, the Buddhist teachings, is that he taught us to find equanimity and even happiness regardless of outer circumstance. It's one way to frame what the teachings are, regardless of outer circumstance. And that's amazing. You know, how our culture is, it's focused on creating pleasant circumstance. And the car, trip to Hawaii, you know, electricity all the time, a great meal, all requisites for a happy life. And we could be fixated on that, attaining pleasant circumstances to have a pleasant life. And we can, here in Western Washington, we can get kind of tricked because, you know, maybe it's dark in the winter, but basically, compared to many humans around the world, we're not in a war zone, there's no famine, we can say what we want without getting thrown into jail, we haven't had much in the way of natural disasters, so we don't get exercised so much about circumstance, outer circumstance anyway. Another inner circumstance, you know, just what Kathy and Marianne were sharing about, and also in terms of Bonnie too, you know, people going through physical stuff, that's real. But that's part of the journey, is how we work with that. Now, in terms of political and social events, that can be a big thing for a lot of people. And I know there's been a lot swirling around in the last year. And I want to be really careful here, because my responsibility is to offer safety and support to everybody, regardless of anything, natural origin, sexual preference, gender identity, or political stance, because we're all on the path. So the other, that's what matters. And so I just, as a sort of a ground rule, let's not talk about, please don't mention any candidates or parties or anything in terms of whatever you say. Want us to be safe for everybody. But it's been a pretty dramatic election. And that's part of what I thought to offer these, just watching what folks are going through all over the country in all kinds of different ways. So the point of what I want to share is some tools to find inner safety and balance deeper than the conditions that may be fraught right now. Whatever they are, could be physical health, could be something to do with politics or circumstance outside, climate change, whatever they are. So that's kind of the journey here. So we're going to be looking at the two subtlest of the four foundations of mindfulness. The two subtlest are Vedanas and mind states. And those two are really amazing magic keys to finding peace and equanimity even in the middle of difficulty. And just as a pop quiz, how many are aware of the four foundations? Any hands there? Four foundations of mindfulness? Yeah, quite a few. Good. And so they're what the Buddha taught as the framework or the guidelines for our mindfulness practice. He specified and explain four areas to be mindful of, although when we really look at it clearly, it's really the entire panorama of experience is what he was saying, nothing left out to be mindful of. But he kind of sliced it and diced it to help us not be lost. And those four are body, Vedanas, mind states, and Dhammas, the latter often called mind objects. And in the sutta, the Satipatthana Sutta, first and the fourth are pretty long and complex. And when people teach about the practice, most of the energy goes into the first and the fourth because they're long and complex. And they're also very sort of concrete and specific. So they present themselves to us in ways that we know they're there. But this is where things get interesting, because the very fact that the Buddha specified all four means that all four are just as important. But the second and third, vedanas and mind states, can kind of slip by unnoticed. And if we don't notice, if we don't notice enough to be mindful, it can cause all kinds of problems in our lives and society and all that. Because the first and the fourth are very tactile and specific. Body elements, you know, you got a body. We're all working with that. And then concrete mind objects, you know, all that stuff about doubt and agitation and thinking and all that stuff, that's pretty common. We know we got that too. We work with that all the time, whether we're willing to be mindful of it or not. That is part of our human process. But the second and third are really subtle, and they can be subtle, and we don't even know they're there. We can miss them entirely. So that's so interesting, and it's really important, the subtle hiddenness during times of strife and division, because very often the difficulties we experience during those times aren't due to the conditions, but how we react to conditions when we're not mindful, specifically around the second and third of the four foundations. So it's really, really worth working on those and cultivating those and getting clearer in our own practice about what they are and how we can work with them and what they mean and how to be mindful of them and do that. So hypothetically, think if you were walking down a lovely forest path, a verdant forest path full of ferns and trees, and everything was fine except for this invisible demon nipping at your heels. And, you know, maybe you just want to be present with the beauty of the forest and be happy, except for this pesky and invisible demon. And, you know, put it another way, an invisible demon can ruin your whole day if you're not noticing and it's nipping and something's wrong, but you're not actually knowing what it is. And especially if we don't see it. So that's kind of the trickiness of the second and third. Because either one can bring darkness and difficulty and suffering, suffering in particular, dukkha, into our lives. But to a large degree, the second and third are ones that we tend to identify with. We think they're us. It's hard for us to realize that they're phenomena because we think they're part of who we are. And so it's hard to be mindful of them because we're embroiled in them. We're identifying with them. And this kind of can come up in a time of political and social upheaval because, you know, maybe values we've held dear are sort of turned upside down. Maybe our tribe isn't in the same position it was. We can suffer. We can suffer in ways that are clued into, tied into these second and third. And, you know, just as an aside, sort of always a key point is pain. Happens. Pain's inevitable some of the time. Suffering is optional. That's like what the path is. Still experience pain, not suffer. That's a way of understanding what the Buddha taught. I teach suffering and the end of suffering. So pain happens, suffering optional. That's why we practice. One way of looking at why we practice. And so the gift of really utilizing the second and third is we can experience all kinds of difficulties, you know, loss politically, societal strain and conflict. We can experience those and be present in equanimity and goodwill right in the middle of the storm. And then the magic is, if we're moved to take action in some way, you know, to be an activist, to align, help align things the way we think they should be, we'll be more effective and uplifting to those around us because we're not lost in identification and conflict. And we can also be happier while we're doing it, or, and if it works or doesn't, Bisi can take actions with an open heart and open spirit if we're not sticky about it. So a few definitions. Second foundation of mindfulness called Vedanas in Pali, Vedanas, often described as pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Sometimes people use the word feelings, but then people think it's emotions, and it's not emotions. It's pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And what the Buddha was pointing to is our sense that when we have a sense door contact, that it's pleasant or unpleasant. Simple as that. Primal. Like the sound of a baby crying is inherently neutral, but that sound will be pleasant to the baby's parent and unpleasant if you're in the back row of an airplane and the baby's right behind you. There's nothing inherent there, but we'll experience it those two ways. And most of the time, we're unconscious. Certainly the people in the back row of the airplane, they're kind of unconscious about how they just think it's inherently unpleasant. They're not realizing it's just a Vedana that they're experiencing and they could be mindful of. Then the third foundation is mind, citta, C-I-T-T-A in Pali, often translated as heart-mind, because it's not just our brain, it's the whole connection between our energetic body, heart and mind. And in this, what's important here is not pointing to some idealized pure state of mind, but kind of the realities of our mind experience. And sometimes our heart-mind, how we are, the condition of our mind is colored. It's colored by greed or aversion, or it's concentrated or it's scattered. But because we're in it, it's hard to see that. So first, a little bit about Vedanas in terms of this political year, this last year, and you know where we are now in the world. And it's been significant over this last year to see how much aversion, the result of grasping onto the Vedana of unpleasant, has kind of permeated the national psyche. Sometimes it seems like the country's two camps, and each one's feeling unpleasant about the other, their sense of the other, the other's actions, all that stuff. And to a smaller degree, feeling unpleasant about the people on their own side, but a lot of unpleasant. Just unpleasant, unpleasant. If it was mostly pleasant, it could be some kind of pleasant party, but it's not. So this, all this unpleasantness has been really difficult and divisive and all that stuff for everybody in our country we live in. But when we can start to look towards the ultimate sense of things, that this pleasant, unpleasant is in fact the second foundation of mindfulness, the very second thing the Buddha said to be mindful of, then maybe we can work with all this differently. So the Vedanas are that they directly follow contact through the six sense doors. First there's contact, and then before we even have an idea about what we're contacting, Vedanas often arises. Very, we don't like it. We like it. You know, pleasant or unpleasant happens instantly before we even know what the thing is, oftentimes. So it's really visceral. It's really automatic, which is important to think about, you know, because we're doing this autopilot thing. And to be mindful of it, we can start to slip the clutch on it so it doesn't grab us so much. It's kind of a reptilian response, Vedanas, to sense contact. Maybe something we evolved, you know, when we were more primitive beings. So when we can start to really regard feelings of pleasant and unpleasant as an object of mindfulness, the second foundation, it's a big deal. Just hold them that way, hold that experience that way. It's really transformational because we can start to just rest in that experience. Oh, this is unpleasant. Without identifying it, without needing to change it, without anything, and without thinking it's me or mine, without grasping onto it. We can just experience it, realize it's not inherent to the sense contact. It's something that we're doing about that sense contact, but it's not inherent to it. It's us. It's us, and to be mindful of that is amazing. And actually, during the pilgrimage, Ajahn Suchart, he spoke directly to this. He said, Start with the body, but don't get stuck with how it feels, with the Vedanas. Body is not ours. We should see it as sensations, but it's not ours. Feelings are like weather. See that they're not myself. But what people do is they do identify with their sense of unpleasant or pleasant. And then they concretize around that, and then they concretize around somebody else who's causing the unpleasant in particular. That other person who's causing unpleasant becomes an enemy. And people want that other person to go away, to shut up, to be vanished, to be defeated, something, so that the unpleasant will stop and people get caught in this loop of aversion and pointing at each other. And it's just something going on internally as a response to contact. And, you know, right now, there's a whole bunch of people experiencing unpleasant in the country because of the election. And it's sort of like a football game. You know, at the end, the losing half of the spectators are experiencing unpleasant and the winning half are experiencing pleasant. So this is a funny thing we humans do. But both of them are caught up. They're identifying with it. They think it's me, my. It's all that stickiness. And as we deepen mindfulness, we can be mindful of the arising of these Vedanas without stickiness. We can just be mindful of it. Watch it happen. But it's not me or mine. There's no other to blame. It is just the experience of unpleasant right now. And then we don't have to attach aversion or attraction to it. That's like a second step. Pleasant or unpleasant just happens. The next step is something that we do in our unconsciousness. It's kind of the magic key to experience pleasant, to be mindful of pleasant without taking the next step. And just to take a look at the framework of Buddha's teachings, Vedanas is really, really important. It's two very important places where it shows up that kind of illuminates what we're exploring here. For one thing, Vedanas are the second of the five skandhas, or the five khandhas, which are the five factors from which we construct a sense of self. First is body, then Vedanas, then perception. And so this is pointing to the role that Vedanas have in us thinking there's a concrete self there. And it's just like the building blocks of how we put that together over and over and over again. So it's the second one between body contact, between body and perception in that structure. And then second, Vedanas is the seventh of the 12 links of dependent origination, right between contact and craving. And that's totally pivotal. You know, from that point of view, there's contact with a sense door contact, and then there's a Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, and then there's craving. And that just drives the samsaric wheel. That drives us from lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. And that's a place. You know, in a lot of ways, that's the place where you can break the wheel. It's right there. Be mindful and don't do craving, because the next is clinging. So it's really powerful. It's a big deal. And if you think about the history of humanity, doesn't it ever always seem like it's this continual epic of war and contest and slaughter and oppression? It's amazing. I know I told a couple of people, you can do this thing on Wikipedia where you can look up a particular year. Try it sometime. It's really fun. Like look up, I don't know, 811 or something and see what was happening at 811. And I guarantee you, there's like massive battles and cities falling under siege and kings overthrowing other, all kinds of mayhem going on for centuries and centuries and centuries. And it's in one way you can look at it, the Vedanas are driving that. It's like pleasant and unpleasant. Something's pleasant and someone in power wants more of it, or they get into power because they're seeking more of it, or it's unpleasant, so they battle those whom they consider causing the unpleasant. I mean, if there wasn't Vedanas, we'd be chill. We'd be like in harmony. So, just suggesting you might consider all that as, for all of us, we're navigating, it's a difficult world we're in right now. Polarized, dangerous, all this stuff, get it? But look at the ways that it's hard and that we're reactive and we suffer. How much of that is because we're not yet cultivating mindfulness of Vedanas as well as could be, or we're working on it. But there's a lot more to go, and it's, you know, work on that. You see what an amazing tool that is to be able to have a different relationship with those situations. Sit with the unpleasant in a freedom of not clinging. And when that happens, for one thing, we don't suffer as much as we did. Dukkha happens when we're attached. Stuff happens, but pain happens. Suffering's optional. The more we can be mindful, the more we don't get sucked in. So we can be there with equanimity in the middle of unpleasant. It doesn't mean we're not helpful. It doesn't mean we're not an activist. It just means we're not suffering. And for another thing, just from this, we can better understand how others are feeling, how they're suffering, how they're caught by the vagueness. And that could really give us compassion, you know, knowing that others either are brothers and sisters and brothers with whom we agree politically, or our sisters and brothers with whom we don't agree, they're experiencing unpleasant vagueness too, and they're afraid, and they're reacting, and they're struggling, and that's why they do weird stuff. To really get how people are caught in this mix of vagueness in causes and conditions, we can feel compassion, even for the persons with whom we most intensely disagree in terms of political choices and all that kind of stuff. A lot of times when you start to look into why they're taking the positions they are, there's vagueness going on, they're unconscious, there's fear. It's pretty amazing. And then the third foundation, mindfulness of conditions of citta, can be even more elusive to be mindful of. It's hard to translate. Sometimes mind-heart represents kind of the state of one's mind and heart. And it's hard to be aware of, and it's the simultaneously, it's the lens through which we see the world. We walk around in this looking at the world through the colorations of our mind and heart. And it's so hard to see that we're seeing that way. It's like a fish in the water. Fish is in the water, doesn't know it's in water. We're in the colorations of our mind and heart and don't even know that because we're in it. But we can get, in practice, it starts to clarify. We start to see, we start to recognize, this tone that I walk in, I've been walking in this thing for years, and I suddenly saw it. And you start to see through it, and then it doesn't have us so much anymore. But as individuals, we're kind of, in a lot of ways, defined by our states of mind. And we can make the mistake of considering them to be us, like that's me, and kind of lock in there. It's a little bit like the fifth skanda, consciousness of. It's not exactly the same thing, but sort of close. That's the hardest for people to realize that that's not them. You know, body is pretty obvious. It gets subtler and subtler if you go through the five skandhas. The last one is hard. But wait, this is me, being conscious. That's me. Well, actually, no. Consciousness is happening. Doesn't mean it's you. Doesn't mean it's me. So it's hard to identify those states of mind. It's hard to be mindful of them, but it's really, really helpful. Especially in a time in history where lots of people are having very strong experiences of their mind states, and that's what we run up against, and that may include ourselves. But to be mindful of it is transformational, because that's what, you know, you look about, especially in a difficult political time, and how people seem. That's really what we run up against the most vividly is the mind states that they're having, just where their stance is. They get all riled up about it. You know, they're just especially when we're in a disagreement with someone about position or something, and they can be like really vibrant and fiery. And then people are super identified with it, and they kind of take their stance and dig in their heels, and then we've got a fight. Discord, disliking, judging. And, you know, we're complex beings. We got all kinds of complex conditionings. This lifetime, many other lifetimes, who knows? So mind states are going to appear, just like barking dogs appear, and just as surely as pleasant and unpleasant appear. So it's going to happen. And the tricky thing, just to say it again, is that we think those mind states are us. So that's harder. You know, Vedanus, at least, is sort of tactile. It can be pretty somewhat reasonable to say, oh, unpleasant, I get that. I can be mindful of that. Mind states, it seems like it's just so much to be able to be mindful of that really takes some cultivation. And so we suffer because mind states, when they're colored, are inherently unsatisfactory. And if we're, you know, lost in them, then we're stuck there. But mindfulness, when we really cultivate this area of our practice and cultivate mindfulness around that, and often cultivate not just on the cushion, but in the moment, you know, when you're got yourself in a situation with a neighbor who sees things really differently, or someone we love who sees things really differently, or a relative, you know, that happens all the time. All kinds of relatives are in incredibly different points of view. And this is really uncomfortable, but then if we can just be mindful of that, you know, be mindful of the Vedanas in that moment, face to face, in the, you know, at Thanksgiving. It will probably happen at Thanksgiving, right? Mindfulness at that moment, face to face, when you're holding a drumstick and the person is saying things that you disagree with, and then mindfulness of the mind state. The Vedanas, the mind state, it can really help to just be present with this being that you're present with, in the middle of it. And, you know, they're the results of causes and conditions, and there's no there. The things are causes and conditions. You can't find a place that they're concrete because it's all cause and effect. And there's also no, you know, ultimately, there's no inherent other person with whom we're disagreeing. There's no inherent enemy. There's just conditioned beings living in mind states. So to be aware of the mind states, we can start to deconstruct all the concretization that makes everybody so stiff and have so much animosity towards each other. And when we really start to see this, compassion arises and self and other falls away. Look at someone like Dalai Lama. I mean, he just has this incredible compassion for those who oppose him. And he'll speak up, but he doesn't stop having compassion. It's pretty amazing. So that's what we need. And Reverend Martin Luther King said about Jesus, and it's parallel. I just love what he said. He said, he realized that it's hard to love your enemies. He realized that it's difficult to love those persons who seek to defeat you, those persons who say evil things about you. He realized that it was painfully hard, pressingly hard, but he wasn't playing. And somehow that quote's always stuck with me because it's getting at the same area, you know, the more we can see in an ultimate sense, which is some way what Jesus did, he saw that it was hard to love the people who seek to defeat you, but he did, and the Buddha did, and we can too, but we have to really do the work. And it's, you know, pressingly hard to realize that when we feel like righteous fury or something, we cling to it about something, some policy position that we think is extremely important, there's a part of how we're holding that is, in fact, just a mind state. And we can see through that through our practice. So I'm almost done. You know, just go all the way back to the beginning. These two gems, mindfulness of Vedana and mindfulness of mind states, they offer kind of a unique doorway into freedom in the midst of the divisions of 2024. And they might be useful. You know, ultimately, there are no concrete beings, selves, at odds with one another. There's no such thing. Ultimately, they don't exist. Ultimately, there are beings who want to be happy, who don't want to suffer, and there are conditions happening. And through our deepening mindfulness, we can hold that and see that in the freedom that's possible. So let's sit for a moment.